Welcome to Slice of Life. Because a bite was not enough, you've listened to Brenda's Bites for years, and now Brenda is expanding her show to include lifestyle happenings from around the region. Now here's your host, Brenda Alacy.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Slice of Life. Thank you so much for carving out some time for us on this Sunday. Hope you're having a wonderful Sunday fun day as this terrific spate of weather we had continues. We had one rainy day, but so far so good, and I hope our summer continues to work out well after the long, tough, gray winter. Well, as always, we have different things happening on Slice of Life. It is the only lifestyle show in Buffalo Radio, and I thought I would be remiss if I didn't bring in my favorite, this ophthalmology group that is really, quite frankly, one-stop shopping. And it's my favorite group of doctors that I've worked with over the years, both as a patient and as an advertiser. It's a pleasure to bring in Dr. David Montesanti from ECVA, Eye Care and Vision Associates. Doc, good morning and welcome to the show.
Good morning, Brenda. Thank you for having me. It's quite an endorsement, so thank you.
Well, thank you. And I speak from experience, as I actually have been a patient of your practice for a number of years now, and I was so pleased that Sandy Beach introduced me to your practice. And Dr. Holmwood is his physician, his eye doctor, and well, as well as mine, and I know you and I have treated as well.
Absolutely.
So when it comes to the whole practice of ophthalmology at ECVA, Dr. Montesanti, can you explain some of the more basic terms? For example, what's the difference between an ophthalmologist, an optometrist, and an optician?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for asking, Brenda. And that's a good point. Just like every field of medicine, there's not one entity that covers all of that particular field. So in ophthalmology, we sort of have a three-pronged approach. We have an optometrist, which is a physician assistant or helper that deals with glasses. So if you want to fit contact lenses or try out new glasses or have them fit correctly to your face, there are experts that can fit these glasses to your face precisely so that the position of, say, the bifocals or the lens itself sits where it's supposed to be. They are excellent at it and take their time doing it for certain. Optometrists are more along the prescription of the glasses. So where the optician, of course, will fit those glasses, the optometrist does a great job at getting the prescription correct so that the numbers within the lens or how the lens is ground with those numbers is such that the patient would see great or you would see just great. And, of course, the ophthalmologist is the surgeon. You've heard of cataract surgery and LASIK, and we all heard of that sort of thing. The ophthalmologists are those MDs that went to medical school and are trained to do those surgeries. They also look at pathology and many disease states of the eyeball and treat those as well. So all three arms of eye care look at things slightly differently, but they all work together in conjunction to give you the best care that we can for your eyes.
How long have you been an ophthalmologist, doctor?
Oh, geez. I graduated in 98, so 2001 I finished residency, so about 17, 18 years.
Well, coming up on two decades, you must have seen a ton of change in your profession. Has there been great technology that have helped people see better and even recover quicker from something kind of routine now, like cataracts?
Absolutely. In fact, that's not just ophthalmology. Most fields of medicines, you'll see an enormous change, even in the last single decade. But you're right, from 18 years ago or 17 years ago when I first started learning this to now, things like cataract surgery and treatments of macular degeneration and diabetic retinopathy, enormous changes just in the speed of recovery. A quick example would be a cataract surgery that 20 years ago we were doing in the hospital and took half an hour, 45 minutes. The recovery time was long and multiple eye drops and multiple visits. We can now do a surgery in 5 to 10 minutes using either a laser or an ultrasound machine and having the vision recovery quick. I mean, 20/20 the next day is not unexpected or unbelievable. So like you've mentioned, things are enormously improved over the years.
And the patient can go out for lunch afterwards probably, right? It's kind of routinely done on an outpatient basis.
It's funny you mentioned lunch. You know, halfway through each surgery, what I hear from the patients who are now wide awake, right? No more putting them to sleep for due surgery. The most frequent point I make is, gee, doc, I'm hungry. When do I get to eat? As I have, you know, instruments over the eyeball.
Right, right. That's what they're worried about, right?
Exactly. But no, we get them up and out pretty quickly and back to lunch.
We're talking with Dr. David Montesanti, who is with Eye Care and Vision Associates, ECVA, as it's commonly called. And there are four locations throughout Western New York. Let's see if I can remember, Doc. Orchard Park, Niagara Falls, New York, Maple and Forest, right around the corner from here at Entercom, and also in the Elmwood Village, right on Elmwood Avenue.
Yep, correct. And this is by design, too. You know, ophthalmology is a big field, and there are a lot of patients in need of eye care and eye care help. In Western New York, we thought, as an original goal when we set up our group, it would be wise to spread ourselves around the Western New York area so that no matter what section, suburb, north, south, east, or west you are in the city, you can get to one of our shops, and all shops all treatment centers that we have are tied in together through not only social media, but directly through links. So any patient who is in need of any help at anywhere in the city, they can get to any one of our offices within a short drive.
So even if I typically go to the Maple Forest location, if I were in Orchard Park, for instance, I could pop in there if there was an issue?
Absolutely.
Perfect.
Absolutely. They know who you were. They punch you up on the computer. You get in, and you'll get a phone call from the doctor you normally see at whichever office, talking to the doctor you see at that office.
That's a beautiful thing. And, Doctor, I know you're a pretty humble guy, but I talked to other physicians in other fields, and one of them once told me that the men and women who are ophthalmologists were the cream of the crop in medical school. It requires a great deal of training, right? You're working, after all, with one's vision, and I can't imagine. When I've often talked to people about our senses and what would be the sense you would hate to lose most, I can't imagine not being able to see. So you're charged with this enormous responsibility of helping people with their vision. What was it like for you when you were in medical school? Is it true that it is the cream of the crop?
Sure. You know, it's funny you mentioned it that way. Not exactly. In all fields of medicine are difficult. And, you know, to talk to one of the neurosurgeons in town and look at the number of years they spent doing not only research but surgery. So the answer to your question, sure, it's difficult to get an ophthalmology residency, but it's also difficult to get many other residencies, including plastic surgery and, like I said, neurosurgery. So sure, again, these subspecialties of surgery are difficult and highly sought after, and so it may be a deal. But cream of the crop might be stretching it just a bit, but what the heck, we'll take it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Do you answer your question about that? So certainly in medical school, a big question that comes up for a lot of us is, you know, how do we decide what field we're going to do? You know, we all go into medicine, hopefully for the right reasons, right, to altruistically help our society and just to push back the frontiers of healthcare. So we all sort of pick a route or a route after we're in medical school for a couple of years. For me personally, ophthalmology, I enjoyed the anatomy of the eyeball. It was small, so the textbooks on anatomy were smaller. But it was interesting. How do you see? How can an eyeball detect one photon of light and change that photon of light to a stimulus in your brain somewhere? So finally, that entire pathway was intriguing, and so that's how I got excited about it and got started.
Oh, it's fascinating to me. And I have to tell you, I've been a patient for a long time. I started wearing glasses when I was 9 years old. So it's been a while. And I've started wearing contact lenses when I was 19. And do you remember, Doctor, they were like these little round hard discs? And I remember when I was in college, I'd have a tendency to wear them too long and my eye would get, you know, I had a little corneal abrasion going on. There were all sorts of issues. And even with the evolution of contact lenses, they're so much easier to wear now. Even now, I can still wear them at my age. My eye can still breathe well enough with these higher-end soft lenses. And I also still wear glasses, and I have sunglasses from all of these from your practice. So I'm peering at you as we speak through your glasses.
Wonderful.
That I bought at ECVA. Thank you. And a shout-out to Nancy, who is in your optical shop at the Maple Forest location in Williamsville, who really takes the time to try to match up the frame with the person's face, what works well, what doesn't. Just top shelf, very friendly, efficient, professional. I can't say enough about your practice.
Thank you. Obviously, we strive for that, as does everyone in town, but thank you for the nice words.
Oh, absolutely. I mean it from the heart. So we talked briefly about cataracts. Would you say, Dr. Montesani, that's the most common thing that you treat right now in Western New York?
Yeah, I think so. In all of surgeries, or all of the surgeries we do in our country, cataracts is the most common and the most successful non-elective surgery. At our practice, ECVA, we have five now ophthalmology surgeons.
Mm-hmm.
We do a large number of cataract surgery, as do other good physicians in town. But I would agree with you that is the most common surgery that we do.
It's not uncommon for me to go in, and usually I see Dr. Holmwood. I've seen you as well. But Dr. Holmwood will say, yeah, you know, Brenda, you have some cataracts, but they're not ripe yet. And that's a good thing, right? Because that means it doesn't have to come out yet.
That's correct. So ripe is a funny term, non-medical. But
right.
The point is, when we say ripe, we don't mean just what we see when we look at your eye, but how are you doing?
Right.
Here's a case in point. I can have two patients, one in each room, who have identical cataracts. You know, they're both 2+ nuclear sclerosis, medical term for these cataracts. They have the same vision, 20/30 vision, let's say. And I walk into one room, and that patient will tell me they're blind. Can't see a thing. I can't see anymore. Doc, you got to fix me. Well, clearly, the cataract is the trouble. It's causing that patient trouble, and we go and fix it. Quick surgery and make them better. Second room, patient still has 20/30 vision, but that patient says, I'm doing great, Doc. I have no trouble. I can see to drive at night. I'm doing wonderfully. That patient doesn't get cataract surgery. So it's not just what we see and how we grade your level of cataracts. It's how you feel.
Makes sense. Yeah, it's individual, as individual as that person, I would imagine.
Absolutely. That's
correct. Amazing, too. And are people who are nearsighted more prone to getting cataracts?
No, not more prone. It's a different, slightly different procedure. The nearsighted people are nearsighted partly, in many cases, I should say, because the eyeball itself, the globe, that spherical eyeball, is larger. The diameter eyeball is slightly larger. So that creates a difference in the style we do the cataract surgery. But the mere definition of myopia or nearsightedness does not preclude them to getting cataract surgery at the same rate as anyone else.
Gotcha, gotcha. I want to go over a few other common conditions, kind of eye care vision 101 for you, I'm sure.
Sure,
but for
sure.
People that hear these terms, it's a scary thing to think about anything that might affect one's vision. And some seem more serious than others. It seems to me no one wants to have a cataract, but if you
right.
do, it's easy for you to remove it.
Correct.
It's relatively. What about glaucoma, doctor? What is that exactly?
Good point. So that is more serious in some respects than cataract or cataract surgery. So glaucoma, in the simple definition, is that the pressure in the eyeball gets to such a level that it shuts off the good, adequate blood flow to the optic nerve. So, simpler, you're losing optic nerve tissue, and the optic nerve is the cord that takes the information from the eyeball, from the retina, back to the brain, so you perceive it. If the cord is damaged in some way, either from high eye pressure or even normal pressure but poor blood flow, that becomes irreversibly damaged, so no longer allowing information to travel from the eyeball back to the brain. Think of the example, you buy a brand new lamp, right? The lamp is beautiful. You plug it in, you turn it on, it works wonderfully. Somebody cuts the cord. That lamp is still working great, looks healthy, but no light, right? You have no connection from the outlet to the lamp itself.
Great analogy.
Same in the eyeball.
Uh-huh. Is that something that can be repaired surgically?
It cannot. So glaucoma, once the damage is done, it can't be repaired. So the goal of treatment of glaucoma is to lower the pressure below the threshold for damage in the eyeball. We can do that by surgery means. We can do it with using eye drops. There are laser techniques. The whole goal is get that darn pressure low enough so that the blood flow is still adequate to the optic nerve, keeping the nerve viable and functioning.
And that's something that you check on a regular basis when somebody comes into ECVA, right, for their regular checkup. That glaucoma is part of that checkup?
Correct. You know, every patient, essentially no matter what they come in for, gets a quick or in-depth detailed glaucoma examination.
It's really thorough when you go to Eye Care and Vision Associates. Again, four locations throughout Western New York: Niagara Falls, Orchard Park, in the city, in the Elmwood Village, and right here in suburbia at the corner of, almost at the corner, it's on Maple, near the corner of Forest in Williamsville. And we're going to talk about some other issues as well affecting our eyes, macular degeneration, and also there's a pretty high incidence of diabetes in our community, and that can have a profound effect on one's vision. My own father suffered from problems with his vision because of diabetes. And we'll talk a little bit more about what to look for, including some troublesome things that really don't have much of a cure, like floaters. And I can speak to that personally as well. Back with Dr. David Montesani from Eye Care and Vision Associates right after this.
You open a door, you walk down the stairs, you stand in a cluttered, dirty dungeon. The worst part? You're in your own home. You say,
basement.
You contact First Buffalo Total Basement Finishing. You schedule a free estimate. You meet with a design specialist. You see a 3D model of your new basement and get an estimate that day. You say,
nice.
You see your basement transform. You have a beautifully finished, maintenance-free space built with specially designed materials specifically engineered for basements. It will last as long as your home, and it all costs less than an addition. You say,
very nice.
You found First Buffalo Total Basement Finishing, the largest contractor in the world. They financed your project. You saved $1,500. Now you open a door, you walk down the stairs, and you stand in a finished
home gym,
man cave,
playroom,
in-law apartment.
And you say,
beautiful.
First Buffalo Total Basement Finishing, from
basement
to
beautiful.
Go to firstbuffalodiscount.com right now.
Hey, it's Bowerly for Jamestown Mattress, South Transit Road in Lockport, north of Millersport. Look, I've been talking about Jamestown Mattress for a long time, and there is a reason for that. It's because Jamestown Mattress is the best place for the best value on a mattress. It really is that simple. Jamestown Mattress has been making mattresses locally for over 125 years, and there's a reason they've been around that long. Jamestown Mattress gives you the quality and craftsmanship for the best value. The best craftsmanship for the best value. you. You'll find over 35 makes and models at their Lockport showroom. Everything from two-sided beds to latex and even custom-made mattresses designed to your exact specs. Pick out your mattress and let Jamestown Mattress deliver the right mattress to your room. You know, you spend about half your life on a mattress. A lot of people do. You might as well have the best. Get to Jamestown Mattress for the best quality and the best value. South Transit Road, Lockport, north of Millersport. Tell them Bowerly sent you to Jamestown Mattress, and make sure you talk to Big Ted.
It's time for some straight talk. Using your phone, yeah, the one right in your hand, could cost up to 30% less every month. Got your attention, don't I? With Straight Talk's Keep Your Own Phone SIM kit, you can keep that phone, your same 4G LTE network and number, but pay less. That's more money in your pocket. The ultimate unlimited plan is just $55 a month. Straight Talk Wireless. Only at Walmart.
Savings may vary. Video typically streams at DVD quality. A month equals 30 days. Refer to the latest terms and conditions of service at straighttalk.com.
Okay, guys, draft time. I need your first round pick.
For 2018, my first pick is... well, duh, 550 Game Time.
That was obvious.
Yep, really the only choice.
This year, Buffalo's first pick in the hockey draft is just as easy as your first pick at the bar. Always go with Hamburg Brewery's 550 Game Time. First round, second, or any round, pick 550 Game Time.
Can I get that in a bottle?
Yep.
Oh, come on. Get your 550 Game Time on draft and in bottles wherever great beer is sold.
Thanks for tuning in to Slice of Life. Now back to your hostess with the mostess, Brenda Alacy.
Welcome back to Slice of Life on this Sunday morning. As always, our thanks to the K-Car, the man pushing the button for us, Kevin Carr. He's always putting us on the right road on our Slice of Life weekly show. We're here, by the way, every Sunday from 10:30 to 11. If you want to hear some previous shows, just simply go to ESPN1520.com. All of our shows are available on podcasts. And it's a pleasure for me to welcome back to the second half of the show Dr. David Montesani, who is with Eye Care and Vision Associates, ECVA as it's more commonly known. You've heard Sandy Beach talk about them on WBEN over the years. And Dr. Montesani is one of five physicians with the practice, joining Dr. Ducey, Full, Cotter, and Holmwood. Doc, welcome back to the show. Great to have you on board today.
Thank you, Brenda. Thanks for having me back.
Oh, it's great. And, you know, one of the more common complaints I hear about is something that I've been afflicted with for years, floaters. It's like these darn little webs or black spots that you see. Almost feels like there's a little bug or something going on, Doc. And I've been told that that, too, is something that might be more common among folks who have nearsightedness. Can you explain what floaters are, and is that true about nearsightedness?
I can explain for certain. So if you picture the eyeball, again, as a spherical globe, large marble, right? It's about 2.5 centimeters, 1 inch in diameter. Most of the eyeball is filled up with a substance called vitreous, which is like a clear jello. That gives it the integrity, the sponginess, you know, so it's, the structure is still spherical and round. So this jello-like stuff called vitreous, as we get older, the center of the vitreous can shrink. It's called sinuresis, fancy medical term. It just means it liquefies and shrinks. If that happens, the sides of the vitreous will pull away from the surface of the retina. And when they pull away, they can pull clumps of debris, such as glial cells and fibrous tissue, and those clumps of debris will sit suspended in this vitreous. Now, light will come through your pupil as it normally does, and as it passes through the clear jello, this vitreous, it'll hit that suspended particle and cast a shadow. So you might notice it as a black fly or a gnat or, you know, a piece of lint floating in your vision.
Right,
if you notice,
thread.
Right, a thread, perfect analogy. If you notice, you can't quite see it. Like, if you look at that thread, it'll move off in your periphery. You try to follow it with your eyes, you never quite catch it. I do the same thing with mine. I think I play Missile Command with mine on the highway.
We should score points or something, right?
If we could, that'd be great. But it's very common. So the question would be, and most people have the next question, is this a dangerous thing? Is this a sign of eye trouble? By itself, it is not. So a typical floater, if you ask everyone you know, you'll find that they'll answer, yes, I have these floaters. So, again, by themselves, not. But they could be a sign, especially if they're accompanied with flashing lights, like a sparkler going off or a strobe light in your periphery, a sign of tension of that same vitreous on the retinal surface. Mm-hmm. And that tension, especially along sticky parts like blood vessels, could put you at risk for a retinal tear. Now, that's less, it's more of an acute situation where you have to come in to one of our offices or any ophthalmology office and get evaluated right away. If there's a tear, it's quite simple to fix if it remains a tear. Once it detaches, that's a whole other story.
Wow.
Your other point about nearsighted people, back to the point that nearsighted people, for the most part, have a larger diameter eyeball with similar size retina, so it's on a little stretch. So for those patients, having tension of the vitreous on the retina may create a higher risk situation for tear of the retina and hence detachment. So we certainly would like to see anybody with new onset floaters, whether they're nearsighted or not, but especially if they're nearsighted.
You know, it's funny because I like to wear those fancy sunglasses I got at your place because I don't notice the floaters as much. They're much more apparent when you look at a white surface or if you look up into the sun or, you know, with stark daylight.
Yep.
Or even in the winter with the snow, you know, it's so white and glaring.
Great observation. You picked that up exactly. If this is a shadow cast by that floating piece of debris, well, clearly the shadow is more dense or the contrast between the shadow and the light is more significant if there is a bright white background or an open sky.
Mm-hmm. Do you see a lot of folks with this, Doc?
Almost everybody, yes.
Really?
Yeah,
almost everybody.
I'd say 50% of the patients that we see, whether we bring up the floaters to them or not, have them. What I don't like doing is pointing out the floaters, and now they start to notice them,
right.
And then I get a phone call the next week saying, hey, what'd you give me these floaters for?
Right. It's all your fault.
Exactly.
Now I know where it came from.
Absolutely.
Doc, some of the other common terms people hear when it comes to vision is or problems with vision would be macular degeneration, which sounds pretty scary. What exactly is that?
Yeah, so that somewhat nebulous term, mm-hmm. when you hear that out there, I'm usually brought up, or the question does come up, hey, do I have dry or wet macular degeneration? I'll explain that in a minute. But the term macular degeneration starts off like this. The macula is a place. So inside your eyeball, the very center of your retina, the area you use to focus when you look straight ahead, like to read something or look at someone's face, the light that comes through your pupil, it falls on that spot of the retina called the macula. So if you put the term together, macular degeneration, well, the last thing you want is a degeneration of the tissue that's involved with you seeing straight ahead. And that's what happens. So briefly, what we think happens is that oxidative radicals, so these little chemicals of oxygen, little variants of oxygen, damage cells that feed the retina. The cells are called RPE cells, or retinal pigment epithelium. But these cells live beneath the retina, and if they get damaged by these oxygen-free radicals, they can no longer feed the retina, give it its nutrients, support the retina like it's supposed to. And the retina, those little individual photoreceptors in the retina, they can die out. We call that atrophy. If that occurs, a patient would develop what we call a dry macular degeneration. Dry meaning it's just loss of the RPE cells and an atrophy of the photoreceptors. That's irreversible. We can't get nerve tissue back no matter what we do. The wet form of macular degeneration comes up when the blood vessels that live beneath those RPE cells, beneath something called Bruch's membrane in the choroid, you know, there's your anatomy lesson, right, for today, but in the choroid, those blood vessels can break through this membrane called Bruch's membrane and sort of exist beneath the retina. And when they do, they can leak fluid and leak blood. That can cause a dramatic change in your vision, especially straight ahead when you look to read something. A wet form like macular degeneration like that does have treatment, and the treatment is aimed at decreasing those new blood vessels that have broken through Bruch's membrane and live beneath the retina. And the treatments usually involve injections of what they call anti-VEGF inhibitors, antibodies to a particular molecule.
Does it go right in the eye?
Yeah, it does. Wow. You know, it sounds awful.
It does.
I'll tell you, though, you know, the patients don't report too much difficulty with it. It's not quite as painful as you'd think. It's more of an emotional wherewithal.
Right, trying to get past the idea of that. Yeah,
absolutely.
I think, you know, the one good thing about having worn glasses since I was a kid and also wearing contact lenses, I'm used to putting things in my eye, so it doesn't flip me out when the doctor comes at me with something. And I know a lot of people, you know, you often hear, Dr. Montesani, about people who have a dental phobia. Do you run into patients who have an issue about their eyes or being touched, anything like that?
Yes, not only patients, doctors. I get phone calls from
the
ER and, you know, there's something in the eyeball. I'm not going anywhere near it, though.
They're going to call you. Huh?
So you're right. People are squeamish. Yeah, when I went through medical school, you know, I have lots of friends who went through with me. He said, what are you doing? That thing is too small and squishy and, you know, they can't even look at it.
Wow.
So you're right. But not only do physicians and healthcare workers also have a phobia of the eyeball, patients do as well.
Interesting. Diabetes is something we hear a lot about in this area. I think a lot of it is due to a lot of the high-fat diet that we eat in Western New York, you know, certainly wings, pizza, ice cream, fish fries, all those things contribute to obesity, and oftentimes people are diabetic who are obese. Tell me how that affects the eye.
Sure. Yeah, diabetes is awful in our country. If you look at the prevalence of diabetes, it's on the rise. You're right, that pizza may be even worse than the wings, but the point is your blood, here we go. The blood sugar rises out of control, we should say, because the insulin in the body is no longer adequate to force the new blood sugar into your cells, let's say. So if the blood sugar is more elevated throughout the bloodstream than it's supposed to be, it starts to glycosylate, you know, a fancy chemical term that means it puts glucose molecules on proteins where they're not supposed to be. Well, these proteins exist in many cells throughout the body and on the surface of some, in a particular group of cells called the pericytes, which wrap around capillaries in the eyeball. And that may not be so important, but if those pericytes have proteins that are glycosylated and they cause trouble, the pericytes can rupture and die, and they no longer can hold the integrity of the capillary. So think of a capillary as a little straw running between two big garden hoses, right? One garden hose is your artery and the other one's your vein. A little straw between the two. And but that straw has to be kept intact. And so it can leak nutrients out to the grass, to your lawn, right? But it can't rupture. If the pericytes are gone because the diabetes had damaged them, you'll get these straws to burst, if you're following my analogy, right? And so then you'll get fluid or blood to leak out onto your lawn. Same thing in the retina, right? So the retina is flat. You get the artery and the vein on each side, little straw between the two. And if the pericytes are damaged, these can rupture. So what we can see from high uncontrolled blood sugar is damage to those capillaries causing hemorrhaging in the retina. It can be anywhere from moderate to severe, causing what we call ischemic changes too.
Really fascinating how it all works in the eye. You know, when you hear about somebody having diabetes, you don't necessarily think of eye issues, but certainly it has a huge impact on it. My father loved to read. It was a real bookworm, and it was particularly cruel that his eyes were affected because of diabetes, and he passed away in 1990. And I often think about how different the technology is to our point in the beginning of the show about how things have evolved. He did get great care, and he was able to salvage some of his vision and still read. So, yeah, there's so much that really affects our vision. And that's why I salute you for the work that you do at ECVA, Doctor, along with your colleagues who are just outstanding, and your other staff members and the other portions of your practice. Before we go, a common question I guess you probably get too, especially for folks who have children, what's the best age to seek an eye exam?
Good point. The answer to that is any age at which you're worried as a parent, If you notice something, it doesn't seem right, or just have that gut feeling something isn't right, any age, bring them in. Usually, you get to an examination early on, just after birth, and the pediatrician will do examinations early. In our office, we can get a good examination on a child at age 3, so certainly by then. But back to the point, if you're not comfortable or have a gut feeling, any age, any time, any of our offices will see anyone.
Great idea. Great idea to get in early. Have that baseline, I think, is so important.
Absolutely.
Dr. Montesani, I want to just run over those locations again.
Please.
And the other thing, too, folks, if you want to give a call to Eye Care and Vision Associates, or ECVA, as it's commonly known, it's a really catchy number. It's 631-EYES, 631-3937. But I often remember just 631-EYES, and that'll get you connected. The locations in Williamsville, is at 811 Maple Road, right near Forest, North Forest. Also in the South Towns in Orchard Park, 3712 Southwestern Boulevard. Right in the city in the Elmwood Village, 932 Elmwood Avenue. And in Niagara Falls, 6917 Plaza Drive in the Falls, and that's Niagara Falls, New York. Dr. David Montesani, what a pleasure to talk to you and to be educated. I love the analogies. You make it easy for a layman like me to understand some of the complexities of the eye. Thank you so much for coming in.
Well, thank you for having me, Brenda. It's always a pleasure.
And it's so great to work with a practice like yours that help people. You know, when I walk into your practice, I see everybody in there from kids to seniors, and I feel like the courtesy extends to everybody. The professionalism as a parent, the moment you walk in the door, keep up the good work.
Well, thank you. I couldn't ask for a better endorsement than that. Thank you
so much. It's been a pleasure once again to talk to you on Slice of Life. We look forward to talking with you next Sunday at 10:30. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening. Brenda will be back next Slice of Life Sunday at 10:30 on ESPN 1520.